I think so. They either would have had to submit it.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Milagro Theater, presenting La Muerta Baila, Milagro's 20th annual Day of the Dead production, playing now through November 8th. Tickets at milagro.org.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a dance party benefit for Safer Streets on Saturday, November 7th at 9 p.m. at Crush in Portland. Safer Streets offers free self-defense classes in various easily accessible locations for women in the Portland metro area who are experiencing homelessness, poverty, mental health or addiction issues, for sex workers, and for survivors of violence or abuse. Safer Streets is queer and trans friendly and welcomes and meets attendees at their particular needs or abilities. That's a dance party with DJ Aurora to benefit Safer Streets, Saturday, November 7th, 9 p.m. at Crush, 1400 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first CMJ College Day on Tour, Saturday, November 7th at Holocene in Portland. College Day aims to fill a day with great programming and speakers from and related to college and non-commercial radio, allowing both new and experienced voices from the radio world to talk about the issues that matter most to them. At this all-ages event, there will be live music, innovative workshops, presentations, and interviews with key members of the music and radio world from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Again, that's College Day on Tour, Saturday, November 7th at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It is 6:01, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Bread and Roses hosts a live reading to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Voice Catcher, a local publisher of women writers and artists. Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs, on the KABU airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. This weekly show is shared among women-identified radio activists, and if you're interested in getting involved as a host, producer, or engineer, even if you don't know what any of those names mean, there's no experience necessary. Please contact KABU's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can email her at volunteer@kboo.org or call the station 503-231-8032. Ani's extension is 213. Connect with Bread and Roses on the KABU website, kboo.fm, Bread and Roses. There you can access podcasts of all of our shows, share feedback, and show ideas. And please, like us on Facebook at KABU Bread and Roses. We have a brand new Twitter account, too, Bread Roses Radio. I'm your host this week, Leanne Kranz, and our engineer is Chris DiMaria. Tonight, Bread and Roses hosts a live reading to help celebrate the 10th anniversary of Voice Catcher, a nonprofit community that connects, inspires, and empowers women writers and artists in the Greater Portland and Vancouver, Washington area. Since 2005, Voice Catcher has lifted the voices of hundreds of women by publishing their poetry, fiction, nonfiction, and artwork in 6 print anthologies and 7 online issues of Voice Catcher, a journal of women's voices and visions. On December 1st, Voice Catcher launches their 10-year anniversary anthology, She Holds the Face of the World, a print collection of over 80 stories and poems, some of the most compelling works Voice Catcher has published in the last decade. Their launch celebration takes place Tuesday, December 1st at Disjecta Contemporary Art Center on North Interstate, 7 p.m. We'll hear a lot more about that throughout the show tonight. We are joined in the studio by the president and managing editor of Voice Catcher, Tia Lindner Raphael, and writers featured in the brand new 10-year anthology, She Holds the Face of the World, local women writers Jennifer Foreman, Claudia F. Savage, Annie Lightheart, and Nikki Shulak. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Congratulations on the launch and the 10 years.
Yeah, we're very, very excited to be here, and we're very excited for the 10-year anniversary.
Yay. Okay, well, my first question, I'd love to introduce properly the president and managing editor, Tia Lindner Raphael. Am I saying that correct?
Well, my grandmother always said Raphael.
Raphael, well, hey, I am not going to argue with a grandmother. Forgive me. Raphael. Okay, Tia Lindner Raphael is an Oregon native and graduate of the master's program in book publishing at Portland State University. She is president of the Voice Catcher Board of Directors and serves as managing editor for Voice Catcher, a journal of women's voices and visions. She's a former poetry and prose co-editor for the journal, and her own writing has been published in Cut Bank and Paper Nautilus, among others. So Tia, I understand Voice Catcher was started 2005 by, quote, 6 women who love to read and write.
Yes, that's correct.
So can you tell us a little bit about the history and the original intention?
Sure. The original idea for Voice Catcher came from Diane English, who is no longer with us. But Diane really had this dream of bringing women together. And eventually she reached out to Sarah Guest, Jennifer LaLime, Elizabeth Jones, and Emily Trinkhouse and Marty Brooks. And everyone was kind of on the same page about Where are women's voices? So let's see if we can create a publication that will bring women's voices together and celebrate them. They didn't know if they would get submissions. They thought, well, maybe we're the only ones with this dream. And then at first they were flooded with submissions, and that first Voice Catcher editorial collective really received a response from the community that yes, this is something that's needed, and yes, it's something that people really want. And then after that, we've had a series of additional Voice Catcher editorial groups that have produced the journal. It went online a few years ago, and this is our 10th anniversary. So we do readings throughout the year. We do events with our youth writers. We also have, we publish youth writers age 14 to 18. We have 2 issues that come out online per year. And we have our hands in lots of other fun literary events in the community.
As I dug into your website, and I was really impressed with several things, like you're an all-volunteer organization.
We are, yes.
That's incredible.
Yes, it is. It's I think it's the love that people have for Voice Catcher, and I'm sure you'll hear that from our readers tonight. People, when they get involved with Voice Catcher, something magical happens, that it's that sense of community, it's meeting other people, it's that sense of belonging, and once people get involved, we keep them.
Another thing I thought was really cool is that you you invite different women, as you would say, mm-hmm. different women to be the curators and the editors of mm-hmm. the different anthologies to give them a different flavor mm-hmm. each time. Mm-hmm. But you're also giving these women a credit, a very key credit in their literary career, an opportunity they don't get mm-hmm. often.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of the volunteer nature and because we're not hierarchical, there's very much this process by which people teach each other. So every editorial group is a little different. People come in with different skill sets and different tastes and different experiences, and that affects the flavor of each journal. So not only does that give us the opportunity to publish a wider variety of styles and types of work, but then I think that learning process, as you said, we teach each other. I mean, I've done this for a couple years now, and I feel like I'm still learning all the time from everyone.
And another cool thing, while I'm on this role, you offer a mentor website where seasoned writers are there waiting to get questions from fledgling writers or writers that are who are stuck mm-hmm. and providing feedback. Very cool.
I think even without the formal mentor program, there's just naturally this mentorship that springs up within VoiceCatcher, because people come together, and wherever a writer is in their process, that's where we want to help and support them. So whether you're someone who has never had anything published and you just started writing and you don't know how to connect with other people, and you come to an event and you meet us for the first time, whether you're that person or you have three books out and you're revising your next manuscript, there's someone there who has been in your shoes and can support you and help you along the way.
You know, when I first moved to Portland, I learned about you all, and it was very meaningful for me to learn that you existed, you know, mm-hmm. that was here in this town, and I wasn't ready to submit anything or, you know, but I liked knowing you were out there, and mm-hmm. I attended one of your readings, mm-hmm. like Looking Glass Books, which is no longer with us in Selwood, and anyway, it was a great event, great writing. When I finally did submit to you all, I learned this is a really rare thing that you offer to writers. You provide feedback, mm-hmm. like very specific. I think I got feedback from you. Mm-hmm. You're the Tia Lindner Raffel, the president and managing editor. You gave me specific mm-hmm. feedback about my story, which mm-hmm. is unheard of. When I tell people that, they're like, excuse me, who are these people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is something very rare. Anyone, I think, who's submitted very many times knows that sometimes all you get is a brief, terse note. I actually had a rejection from some place that shall not be named that said, thank you for your story. And I was like, I submitted three poems. I didn't submit a story. Oh my gosh. So, you know, I think that we try to bring in attention to detail and a respect to the process, because we're all working writers. We've all been there. And so we really want to lift up and encourage people wherever they are. And maybe we can hear from a couple of people who've been editors. I'd like to hear from Claudia and Nikki about that.
Yeah, I've been writing a long time, and it was one of these interesting things where I totally remember when the submissions started coming in, and we were, the process of how, there were four of us who were co-editors, but the process of how we had dialogue about people's work, that was one of the most fascinating things to me, because I've done other things with other literary magazines, and I just thought, wow, this is really a cooperative experience where we're really, like, people went to bat for certain pieces and kind of were like, this deserves a chance. And we were able to sort of say, okay, you get that piece if I get this piece. And there was sort of, you know, there's a little bit of back and forth that went on that I thought was just really lovely. And I distinctly remember asking T at one point, well, what is the aesthetic we're trying to do here at VoiceCatcher? And she's like, well, the aesthetic is all of you. Like, it doesn't. That was the thing that really shocked me. Like you were saying, Leah, that we were able to all sort of say, well, my work tends to be slightly more avant-garde. And so I was able to say, well, I want to bring in those writers. Like, I want to lift those people up in this issue because I'm part of this. So that was a really beautiful thing, I thought.
I also was a co-editor assistant, and
I was amazed at, you know, I've submitted many, many times to many publications, and you hear about the slush pile, but I'd never actually seen one before. And I learned so much about being a good submitter through that experience, what stands out. I tend to write funny, so I was looking for funny pieces, and I do remember going to bat for a piece that just made me laugh. and I think you do tend to look for things that are similar to the kinds of things that you like to write. I'm not a poet, but I was with a group. Two people were poets, and I learned a lot about editing poetry through that experience. I loved that.
That was Nikki Shulak. Before that, we were from Claudia F. Savage. I think, no. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KABU. Tonight we host a live reading to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Voice Catcher, a local publisher of women writers and artists. We're here to celebrate the launch of their 10-year anthology, She Holds the Face of the World. So speaking of that anthology, can you describe, you know, I can imagine sifting through a decade's worth of women's writing and art. How did you choose the pieces for the anthology? What were you looking for? How did it turn out?
Well, we had a great group of readers. So some women in the community who volunteered to read and wanted to be part of Voice Catcher or had been editors in the past. So they were the ones who did all of the reading over the summer, and they made recommendations to our two lead editors. So Judith Pullman was our prose editor, and Nancy Flynn was our poetry editor. And then from there, it was an interesting process of trying to reach out to people and reconnect with them. And sometimes people had moved or their email addresses had changed. And so we had a wonderful intern who was also one of our Young Voices writers. And, you know, we put together this list and set about finding people. And it was really a joyful process to talk with people maybe who had lost contact with Voice Catcher, who we hadn't heard from in, say, 7 years, and then to tell them that we wanted to publish their work in the anthology. And just that's the excitement and the enthusiasm and momentum, and even people who we hadn't talked to in 7 years who just said, oh my gosh, I still love Voice Catcher. I love Voice Catcher so much. And to feel that, this was incredibly rewarding. I was so lucky to be the person to get to read all of those love notes that we got from people.
And what do you have planned for the launch on December 1st?
Well, we're going to have a reading, and we'll have a small art show with artists who were published in the journals. So that'll be in the Flex space at Disjecta. And then we'll also have a few other fun things, some raffles and things like that.
So that is Tuesday, December 1st at Disjecta Contemporary Arts Center. That's 8371 North Interstate in Portland. Starts at 7. Mm-hmm. The reading starts at 7:30. Mm-hmm. And you want folks to RSVP for that?
We would like it if they'd RSVP. That would give us an idea of how much food to buy and how much cake. We're going to have a delicious anniversary cake. So, yes, that would help us a lot.
So we're joined in the studio by four writers who appear in the 10-year anthology, She Holds the Face of the World. We have Nikki Shulak. Welcome back to Bread and Roses, Nikki.
Thank you, Leanne.
She'll be reading later in the show. We have Annie Lightheart, Jennifer Foreman, and Claudia F. Savage. I'm curious, how does it feel to know that you are going to be standing, your writing is going to be in this historic anthology for such an important women's press? They're all in shock and awe.
For me, it's a strange and wonderful thing, because when I was in school, I had a teacher tell me that my housekeeping type of poetry, my mothery poetry, by which I understood subtly he also meant my womanish poetry, was not marketable and would never find a place in the world. And for a number of years, I kind of took that writing underground, and I kind of hid it, because I knew that women can write epic poetry and worldly and political poetry. But I also wanted to explore the intricate, complicated experience of motherhood and to think that that poetry wasn't welcome in the world was really a sort of frozen experience. I believed the teacher. I didn't read a lot of that kind of poetry. I didn't see it out in the world that often. And so I had this kind of stash of poems that I didn't send out very often. And when I heard about Voice Catcher, I thought, this could be a safe space for this writing. And there might be a chance that they would take a poem about mothering. And I could come out of that little closet. And to my amazement, they took this poem that I brought tonight. And so to have it be in the anthology is just a wonderfully heartening thing.
That was Annie Lightheart. We'll hear that poem a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, I totally wanted to speak to that, Annie, because I think for me, I discovered Voice Catcher after having my daughter, and it's such an isolating thing to have an infant and be working full time and being exhausted constantly, and my art was the first thing to go, and it was the first time in my life that that sort of went by the wayside. And I remember seeing a call with Voice Catcher, thinking, well, maybe I'll submit a few poems to them. And after they accepted them, I thought, well, maybe I should write about what it feels like to try and still do this. Because I know that there's women out there who are struggling like me, and like Annie was saying, that are really feel isolated and feel like they're not worthy to keep making art. And that was just completely emboldening for me to sort of start getting notes when I was writing for the blog about, yeah, I'm having this experience too, and you're right, I should go and I should do an artist residency in a year. Like, I deserve that. I deserve to put this at the forefront, that my voice matters. So, yeah, that was wonderful. The Voice Catcher gave me that opportunity.
I had been writing when my kids were young, and I would do it often in the middle of the night when I couldn't sleep and everybody else was sleeping. And I met a parent. She was a parent and a teacher at my kid's school, and she was one of the Voice Catcher editors at the time. And I said, you know, I've got this little thing that I wrote, and I wonder if you would just look at it and tell me what you think. And she read it. She said, oh, you have to submit this. And nobody had ever said that to me before. And this was my piece about the thong. And and I submitted it, and they took it, and it was my first publication. And Voice Catcher, I owe so much to Voice Catcher for giving me my first publication and to give me the confidence to continue to write and send things out. I'm very grateful.
That was Nikki Shulak.
I like to say I had a similar experience with Voice Catcher being my first publication. It was amazing to get an acceptance letter. And the editor, the poetry editor at the time, she, you know, I'm like one of the only two people that still have a Hotmail account. And so my acceptance letter went to my spam. And so I get a letter in the mail from the poetry editor, and I called her immediately. I was extremely excited, and she said, well, I was worried you were out of town, and just in case, my husband drove by your house and saw your cats in the window. And so I was like, this is the kind of publication I want to be a part of, if grassroots, you know, and for women. It's an amazing way. So the communication has been great. To have my stuff published, to feel like someone is giving me a chance, and then to have an editorial experience, to have an editor work with you and say, you know, but in a loving way, can we work on this? Can we do this? Not, you're going to do this. It's a great first experience to have. I feel so honored to be a part of the organization, and then to have one of my pieces make it actually to the hard copy anthology is just such a deep honor. It's really exciting.
Thank you, Jennifer Foreman. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. Tonight we're joined for a live reading by women writers featured in the 10-year anthology of Voice Catcher called She Holds the Face of the World. We're going to take a quick musical break and be back with the live reading.
Sometimes I go walking through fields where we walked long ago in the sweet used to be. And the flowers still grow, but they don't smell as sweet as they did when you picked them for me. And when I think of you and the love we once knew, how I wish we could go back time. Do you ever think back on old memories like that, or do I ever cross your mind?
That was Joan Osborne with Do I Ever Cross Your Mind off the Just Because I'm a Woman, Dolly Parton tribute CD. Welcome back to Bread and Roses. Tonight we're hosting a live reading by the women writers featured in the new Voice Catcher 10-year anthology, She Holds the Face of the World. We're first going to hear from the three poets tonight, Jennifer Foreman, Claudia F. Savage, and Annie Lightheart. And they will be introduced by Voice Catcher's president and managing editor, Tia Lindner Rafel.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Jennifer Foreman first. Jennifer is a loudmouth, fiery Texan who loves living in Portland. Her day job is social worky stuff for the county, and she's a local storyteller and poet, but she's now trying her hand at memoir. She's had several poems published and is working on getting her prose published. Jennifer can often be seen riding her adorable bike, Shishi, around Portland, and she has two orange twin tabby cats at home.
So I'm going to read my piece, Relic. Relic. Your paint-stained hoodie still hangs in our closet. Your ashes rest on the shrine of your nightstand. Locals come by asking to hold your asthma inhalers. Cats sleep on your pillow next to my head. Bread crust from your last sandwich are under a glass dome. Beer you were drinking when you died is in the fridge. Some spilled on the bottom shelf. I refuse to clean it up, ever. I won't wash your dirty socks. I pray to your old hair ties, twisting the knotted hair strands with my thumb and index finger, chanting your nicknames, speaking in tongues when I think of the life we had. Sweet saint of the working class carpenter, big lug, gentle giant. I pour whiskey on the ground and whisper your full name 27 times. Thomas Michael Palmer, Thomas Michael Palmer, Thomas Michael Palmer. I pace the floor waiting for you to come back, dress like you for Halloween, throw my hands up begging you to be my savior, deliver me from the absence of you. Your nail clippings have been fashioned into a mobile that hangs over my bed. I sleep in your underwear and large torn t-shirts, holding your truck keys. Wake up to the sound of your voice. Someday a stranger will find your sketch pad and declare you a prophet. Our apartment has become a stupa.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Wow.
Thank you.
That was Jennifer Foreman reading Relic. My gosh. Beautiful. Powerful. That's a poem only a woman could write, in my opinion.
Yay! Our next reader that I'm introducing is Claudia F. Savage. Claudia used to cook for people who were recovering from illness, and she wrote The Last One Eaten, A Maligned Vegetable's History. She's been published in numerous journals, including Book Slut and Denver Quarterly, Nimrod, and the Waterstone Review. When she's not busy with Voice Catcher, we sometimes let the Attic Institute have her as a teacher, and she teaches through her through Savage Poetics. She wrote a wonderful blog that I would encourage everyone to read called Leave the Dishes, Making Art While Raising Children. And that's on Voice Catcher's website. And she, with her husband, is part of the poetry musical duo Thick in the Throat Honey. Claudia.
Thanks so much, Tia. It's funny that the piece I'm going to read tonight is actually about my ex-husband, but part of my manuscript currently that has been circulating is about the two men in my life. I'm sort of a deep believer that even when things don't work out, we've learned from people in our lives, so this is about my ex. It's called Thicker Than Water. He is not even here, but the dinner conversation is going badly. The guests are talking about some perceived evil, oil and gas drilling, ranching, pork, in such a way that the tone slants toward that place where country people are only huddling, dull-eyed sheep bleeding for Jesus. The guest who swirls her Cabernet is delicate in candlelight. The guest who shivers, doubting the fact that I can shoot, compliments my green beans. They are forking in the roasted potato, the room. I want to show the guy my left hook instead of the apple tart. This I can stop. Loving him muddied a line inside me. I want to tell them there is a woman in a wheelchair echoing the blue hills rain, whether or not I am there to listen. There is a cabin above the plum orchard that you must stoop to enter. For 130 years, its planks let the world in. At dusk, a bluebird's call can carry through the blackberry to greet the twilight. There is his grandfather trying to save that man falling into the cement pit, thick dust blinding. There is his father pushing brooms through the high school halls to fill his belly. There is him hiking into the mountains in 3 feet of snow, gusts urging it below 20, for so many hours that his fingers lose their sense of touch and never regain it. And how he didn't complain as I wrapped blanket after blanket around him, the skin on his knuckles elephantine, cheeks furious with wind. I want to tell them no hillside will ever sigh at your return, no pine sweeten. His people never trusted me, and now have even less reason to. Still, he made his history mine. He said, the mountains will turn your legs to ghosts. These vines are good for thickening. He lengthened his vowels in the curve of my ear till they nested, sun-filled snakes. Without him, I fear the clay rivers will not recognize me. I fear there will be no welcoming hillside, no leaf-tinged light. I fear I will be stuck hearing Northeasterners chew their fattened beef at my table forever.
Wow. That was Claudia F. Savage reading Thicker Than Water. The images in that poem are so strong.
Thank you. Our next reader is Annie Lightheart. Annie started writing poetry after her first visit to Oregon when she went to an old-growth forest. Mm-hmm. Since those first strange days, she has published her poetry collection, Iron String, with Airlie Press. And she's also had her poems read on the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor. She has taught at Boston College. She's been a poet in schools. And she teaches right now for Portland's Mountain Writers.
This poem is called The Hundred Names of Love, and I want to dedicate it to Voice Catcher for believing in it and for giving it a home. The Hundred Names of Love. The children have gone to bed. We are so tired, we could fold ourselves neatly behind our eyes and sleep mid-word, sleep standing, warm among the creatures in the barn, lean together and sleep, forgetting each other completely in the velvet, the forgiveness of that sleep. Then the one small cry, one strike of the match head of sound, one child's voice, and the hundred names of love are lit as we rise and walk down the hall. 100 nights we wake like this, wake out of our nowhere to kneel by small beds in darkness. 100 flowers open in our hands, a name for love written in each one.
That was Annie Lightheart reading The 100 Names of Love. Wow, I'm speechless with this work.
There's goosebumps in this room right now.
All of the work you just heard will be featured in the Voice Catcher 10-year anthology, She Holds the Face of the World. This launches December 1st at a party at the District of Contemporary Arts Center, North Interstate, 7 o'clock. Please RSVP if you'd like to hear pieces like this. See artworks of some of the women that this publisher, Voice Catcher, has given voice to and taken out into the world for the last 10 years in our community. As I said before, you're so rare in so many ways. It means something, I feel, for women to have a women-only space, a place where they can feel safe to submit their writing. And I want to make clear that Voice Catcher is also open to women-identified writers. I mean, everyone who identifies as a woman is welcome to submit and participate in this. We're just this local treasure. Mm-hmm. I just feel very honored that you all are here tonight to celebrate this and that you've been keeping this alive in our community for 10 years.
Thank you. It's exciting for us to be here, and it's exciting for me as the president to bring the work of Claudia and Nikki and Annie and Jennifer to the public, because I want everyone to have that magical experience that I've had reading their work and getting to know them. And hopefully people will come to the event and come to other Voice Catcher events and get to know all of us, because it's a pretty fun community to be a part of.
Yes. So while we're mentioning that, how can people get in touch with you and get connected with you?
Well, we have a pretty active Facebook group, so people can find us on Facebook. They can also go to our website. We're open for submissions right now for our next journal that will come out in winter 2016. So we're accepting work until November 15th. And then we also have a wonderful community website where we have tips and tricks for writers. It's where Claudia's blog is. It's a great place for people to receive some support and see what we're all about. And that's where they can also see information about our readings and our events.
And where can folks get a copy of this anthology, She Holds the Face of the World?
Right now, it's available on our website, and we do have a little bit of a discount, so I'm going to shamelessly plug it. So until November 10th, the book's $15. After that, it'll be $20. And we are hoping to get the book in some local bookstores. So, Powell's, I'm talking to you.
That's a great name, by the way, for the anthology. She holds the face of the world. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a line from one of the poems in the book. It's a writer from Vancouver, Washington. Her name is Jody Marion. And so we had a little internal contest with our readers. Everyone nominated lines from different poems or fiction and nonfiction pieces. And then we had our top three contenders, and we voted, and it was a landslide for the line from Jody's book.
Hard to beat.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And she's a wonderful poet. She's got a great chapbook out.
Are you able to name some of the other writers and artists featured in the anthology?
Oh, sure. Off the top of my head. Well, let's see. Emily Kendall Frey, Paula Ann Peterson, of course. Those are the names of everyone we'll recognize. Mm-hmm. Who else do we have? Ann Gugger has a piece. B.E. Scully has a piece. Help me out here, everybody. Jennifer Springsteen has a piece. Alita Thatcher, Pearl Waldorf. Those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
Cool. Again, we're talking about the 10th year anniversary anthology put out by Voice Catcher, a local publisher of women writers and artists, called She Holds the Face of the World. We just heard some poetry by contributing writers Jennifer Foreman, Claudia F. Savage, and Annie Lightheart. We're going to take another quick musical break and come back and hear a longer piece by returning Bread and Roses guest, Nikki Shulak, reading Volvar Fantasy. So do stay tuned for that. We'll be right back. That was Patty Griffin and Robert Plant with Ohio off of American Kid. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. Tonight, Bread and Roses hosts a live reading to help celebrate the 10th anniversary of Voice Catcher, a local publisher of women writers and artists. On December 1st, they'll launch their 10-year anthology, She Holds the Face of the World. And we have a studio full of local women writers. We've already heard Jennifer Foreman, Claudia F. Savage, and Annie Lightheart reading poems featured in the 10-year anthology. And up next, we're going to hear from Nikki Shulak. You might remember her from former readings here on KBOO. She does not disappoint. And I will let the current president and managing editor of Voice Catcher, Tia Lindner Rafel, introduce her properly.
So Nikki Shulak writes and performs comedy about bodies and relationships, two of my favorite things. Her first published work, My Midlife Thong Crisis, appeared in Voice Catcher 3. And her piece on not seeing whales, published in the Bellevue Literary Review, was chosen as a notable essay in the Best American Essays 2013. She was an assistant editor of Voice Catcher 6, and she lives in Portland with her teenagers, her husband, her boyfriend, and her beloved dog, Calvin.
Thank you. This is an excerpt from a piece called Volvar Fantasy. How often do you look at your vulva? I'll bet you can't remember the last time. Let's face it, examining your vulva is awkward. It takes creativity and also a level of privacy that a mother with two young children is rarely afforded. Besides, there aren't a lot of reasons to look at your vulva unless you're into that sort of thing or it itches and you think you might have cancer. My gynecologist handed me a mirror and took me on a little vulvar tour. Are you comfortable, Nikki? Can you see everything all right? I can. Can you see this? Yes? This is the area that concerns me. This darkened area, just above the perineum region. She points with the soft end of a Q-tip. I'd like to do a biopsy. Oh, I hate it when doctors are concerned. Don't worry, I'm just going to take a bit of tissue from here and here. She places emphasis with the Q-tip. But not from here. She points to a porcelain-colored spot, which also apparently concerns her. That's too close to your clitoris. Ah, my clitoris. I'll give you 2 shots of lidocaine. They'll feel like bee stings. After that, you shouldn't feel a thing. I've been itching for a few months when I made the appointment. No one is saying I have cancer. The doctor suspects a skin disease called lichen sclerosis, but she also uses the words melanoma and squamous cells. I hear her distinctly. She tells me when I read the lab report on my chart not to panic if I see the words melanoma or squamous cells. My chart is the new program adopted by the University Hospital that makes it possible for patients to check their own lab reports online. At the moment, I'm not panicked about anything except the impending vulvar bee stings. Shelley, the nurse, enters to prep the room for my biopsy. She dons purple gloves and pours betadine into a shallow, kidney-shaped stainless steel bowl. Shelley has inch-long bleach blonde hair. She sends me off to provide a urine sample. This is difficult because the toilet is an automatic flusher. Every time I try to gather some urine, the toilet flushes, forcing me to stop peeing and pull the sample cup to safety. I figure this must be a test. I pass the test and return triumphantly with my sample. Shelley has set up a series of sharp instruments on a tray. She's removing her gloves. Now, don't you worry a minute about the biopsy. Dr. Mason does these every day. She's really awesome. Why does everyone keep telling me not to worry? Shelley is a nominee for the Best Nurse of the Year award. I know this because she's wearing an addendum on her name tag that says so. Look, Shelley pulls her white tights taut against her skin to reveal a brightly colored tattoo of a shooting star. It covers half her calf. Now this really hurt, she says matter-of-factly. The tattooist said it would feel like sandpaper rubbed over a burn over and over again, and it did. It felt just like that. She tells me this in a conspiratorial whisper. Shelley pauses and looks me over. I'm wrapped in a paper sheet, holding a sample cup full of urine. Do you have any tattoos? She asks, no longer whispering. I shake my head, modestly. My mind wanders as I climb back up on the table. I'm thinking about pain. I'm thinking about vulvar tattoos. This is a good distraction. Do people get vulvar tattoos? Sure they do. There's nothing people don't do. The print on the wall of the exam room is titled Asian Pear. A pear-like fruit has been sliced in half and set on a silk cloth. The cut fruit looks like female anatomy. How subtle. My doctor returns. She's a tiny woman with big curly hair. She totters confidently on 3-inch heels. The toes of her shoes are very pointy. Shelley asks if I want her to hold my hand. Thanks, I reply. I'd rather just hold on to the edge of this table here and cringe. Dr. Mason tells me to breathe. It turns out that the bee stings and the biopsies both hurt, but the bee stings hurt more. They make me swear like a rap star. Why can't they skip the shots and just do the biopsies? Even my dentist gives me laughing gas. When the procedure is over, Dr. Mason extends the hand mirror toward me. Would you like to see what I've done? I don't. I just want to go home and never look at my vulva again. I waddle around in the afternoon and evening. The anesthesia wears off and I am sore. My husband is out of town for a week, so I rent 6 chick flicks. I plan to watch one each evening after the kids are asleep. The first night, my daughter wakes in the middle of Juno. She's had a nightmare. I dream Daddy never came home, she says simply.
I crawl in bed with her. In the morning, I get my kids to school. Then I call my friend Cassie to tell her about my biopsies. Are you scared? Do you think you have cancer? Did you read that book I told you about, Crazy Sexy Cancer? I still haven't read the book. I'm not scared exactly. I'm a little worried. What if Ben's plane crashes and I have cancer? Who will take care of our kids? My mother's mother died from colon cancer when my mother was 9. My mother died from breast cancer when I was 28. We have a small cancer legacy going on in my family. It's indulgent, I know, but whenever I have a physical anomaly, I always assume the worst. I'll think good thoughts about your vulva, Cassie promises. I'll make a pastel of your vulva. I'll make an altar to your vulva. I'll pray on it. Dr. Mason has said she'll post the results of my biopsies on my chart in about a week and also call me. Waiting is hard. I can't resist checking my chart 2 nights later, right after watching 27 Dresses. No results yet. My chart is a theoretically practical concept. I log onto the website and enter a password. Suddenly, here's my medical history managed by some stranger who apparently knows my vulva itches. I can see my current height and weight. I'm reminded that I have an allergy to egg whites and a prescription for Ambien. I have family history of stroke, heart disease, diabetes, and, of course, cancer. Also, I note that I have something called tinea. What the heck is tinea? I Google it. Tinea is ringworm. Please note, it's a fungus, not actually a worm, but it is contagious. I've never had ringworm. I'm indignant. The stranger who's entered this information has obviously made a mistake. Or maybe it's a joke. More likely it's a mistake. My medical information has been switched with somebody else's. Some poor sap out there is reviewing his own My Chart page, wondering when exactly he had a bout of vulvar itching. Doubt has now been cast on the validity and accuracy of the entire My Chart program. I do some additional research about ringworm. Maybe I had it, but I forgot. I look at images of ringworm. I would remember if I'd had that. But wait! This image does look familiar. This image looks exactly like the red splotch on my husband's upper thigh. I call him right away, even though it's 3 a.m. in New Jersey. I leave a message on his cell phone. I think you gave me ringworm. I think I have vulvar ringworm. The next afternoon, a neighbor invites me and my kids for a bike ride. I can't, I whisper to her about my biopsies. Oh, she whispers back and nods knowingly. Vulvular problems? Vulvar problems. Oh, yes. Her eyes widen slightly. It's vulvar, not vulvular. Are you sure? Vulvar doesn't sound right. The nurse kept saying vulvar. I thought it sounded wrong too, but I looked it up and it's definitely vulvar. Oh yeah, like how people say nuclear. She smiles at me. Vulvar, vulvar. She keeps repeating the word like she doesn't want to forget it. Vulvar, yep, I say. Remember that Seinfeld episode, she says, where Jerry dates a girl whose name rhymes with vulva? Mulva or something? Or no, wait, was it Dolores rhymes with clitoris? Right, I think it was Dolores, I say. When will this conversation come to a natural end? So, she asks, do you have VD or something more serious? That night, I watched Knocked Up. Then I study images of lichen sclerosis on the internet because I read that women with scarring from lichen sclerosis are at a higher risk for vulvar cancer. I look at pictures of vulvar cancer, too. These are disturbing images, the opposite of erotica. People don't whisper the cancer word as softly as they used to, but I wonder how folks respond when told that someone has vulvar cancer. You give your condolences, sure, but questions hang in the air. Do they remove vulvas? Can you still have sex? What about your clitoris? What happens to your clitoris?
Thank you. That was Nikki Shulak reading Vulvar. That's Vulvar Fantasy.
And if you want to know what happens, you can read the rest of the story in the publication.
Great. And please tell us one more time about that publication, Tia Lindner Raffel.
It's a 10th anniversary anthology celebrating Voice Catcher. So we have 80 plus pieces from local women writers and poets. We have nonfiction, we have fiction, we have a little bit of everything in it. And it's called She Holds the Face of the World, 10 Years of Voice Catcher. And it's available on our website.
Do you mind giving folks that website?
Sure, it's www.voicecatcher.org.
And once again, the Voice Catcher anthology, She Holds the Face of the World, will be launched properly on Tuesday, December 1st, Districta Contemporary Arts Center on North Interstate, 7 p.m. Reading starts at 7:30. Please RSVP so they have enough cheese puffs or whatever they're going to have for us all. I want to thank all of the featured writers who were brave enough to read on the air tonight. The pieces were beautiful and powerful, and it's a nice introduction to what's in store for us in this anthology. We heard tonight from Jennifer Foreman reading her poem Relic, Claudia F. Savage reading her poem Thicker Than Water, and Annie Lightheart reading her poem, The Hundred Names of Love. And Nikki Shulak, Vulvar Fantasy. She was only able to read part of that. So do buy the anthology, She Holds the Face of the World, the 10-year anthology by Voice Catcher, local publisher of women writers for the last decade. Thank you, Voice Catcher, for all that you do and have done for the last 10 years in our town.
Thanks for having us, and thank you to all the women who come to our readings, or to everyone who comes to our readings, to the women who submit to the journal. We are growing, and we're excited for the next 10 years and what we're going to accomplish.
Right on. Well, thank you again for being our guests. Congratulations. Your work being published in this 10-year anthology. And thank you for listening to KBOO. I'm Leanne Kranz. Thanks to our engineer, Chris DiMaria. Stay tuned, please, for Hard Knock Radio. We're going to go out with Tori Amos, God.
Sometimes you just don't come through. God, sometimes you just don't come through. Do you need a woman to look after you? God, sometimes you just don't come through. You may burning gets a little toasty. Hey, you, hey, you.
not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings.
We'll heal you, even tell her if you decide to make the sky fall. We'll heal you, even tell her if you decide to make the sky. God, sometimes you just don't come through. God, sometimes you just
And now for a community announcement by our friend Mount Hood Community College.
My mom holds her accent like a shotgun with two good hands.
But when your mother carried you, the ocean in her belly is what made you buoyant, made you possible. You had it under your tongue when you burst through her skin.
She waited too many years for her voice to arrive to be told it needed housekeeping.
It's possible that we know the world better because of the blood that visits some of us.
You ever shake loose the dust and realize all this time you were waiting to be born? Her words spill in conversation between women whose hands are all they got. Sometimes our hands are all we got.
See, your daughter's gonna teach you what all men must one day come to know, that women, made of moonlight, magic, and macabre, will make you know the blood.
So even when her lips can barely stretch themselves around English, her accent is a stubborn compass, always pointing her towards home.
This November 17th and 18th, the Mouths of Others and the Diversity Resource Center at Mount Hood Community College will host a two-day conference on literature and social justice. On the 17th, Alita Imarisha, Adrian Brown, and David Walker will join us to discuss their award-winning anthology, Octavia's Brood. On the 18th, internationally renowned slam poets Dominique Christina and Denise Froman, known together as